Hi, so I'm sitting on the loft bar with my good friend Matt Murillo. Matt last year was here with The Adventure in the Escort, which Fringe Review gave a teapot to. There is a thing about nicer people making nicer theatre. Despite the fact that Matt does shows which are certainly very raunchy, there's nothing nasty about them. They are good, clean family fun for unuptight people. This year, with a slightly larger company, he's producing Angry Young Women in low-rise jeans with high-class issues. They've just come off set for the fourth time?
Sixth time. Yeah, sixth show.
And how are the audiences?
Superb. They've been really wonderful. They've been huge, which is great. I think the smallest audience we have is 40, which is like the biggest we had last year. The show translates. It was very successful in New York and LA, and then it went over to Sydney and Brisbane. We always had a hunch it would do well here, and so far it looks like our hunch was correct.
This show, Angry Young Women, it's been on a variety of formats. It's been a web series, it's been on the stage, but it's fundamentally different scenes, kind of like a sketch comedy sort of, but extended scenes that have been spliced together. Is that right?
Yeah, I think it's a mix of monologues, sketches, and playlets. I think playlets would be the best way to put it, because they are extended sketches. Sketches are usually 5 to 7 minutes. The two playlets are about 18. One's 19 minutes, one's 21 minutes. So they're a little bit longer, but they're telling a story. You're almost getting a one-act play out of it, a one-act comedic play, and then interspersed in that, you got like elements of a spoof of a variety show, if you will. I mean, we're poking a little bit of fun at that kind of stuff, so that's what we're trying to do with it. The point of the show is fun. The title's fun. We like to think the image we chose is fun, and we like to think people have fun. I tell the actors when I direct them, have fun up there. If you have fun, it'll translate to the audience.
There's a guy in his pants, though, towards the end on stage. I'm not giving anything away. In the final scene, they're shooting a movie scene, and a bit like Love Actually, there's a sort of love scene between an actor and an actress, and there's a guy in his pants and his boxers up there. He doesn't always look like he's having fun. Why can't you make that guy smile?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. That character was inspired by my early days in the 90s when I was in film school working on sets, and you always had one grouchy guy on set. Just a grouchy guy, and I made that into that character, Christoph, who's just, his job is to take this production that's out of hand, that's 2 weeks behind on day three, and to try to get it all together. So, you know.
And I should say that Matt does actually play Christoph, so, and that wasn't originally the plan, was it?
No, not at all. I am not a trained actor. I'm not a particularly good actor. Just budgetary reasons, we looked at the numbers and said, well, do we really want to spend the amount of money it's going to take to bring another actor over just for that role? Because everything else was cast, and you saw the show. It's a relatively small role. He does not have a lot of lines. He doesn't move a lot. So we did not need a trained stage actor, which I'm certainly not. And because of the years and years and years of doing the show, I was already off book. So I didn't need to learn the script. I can recite it in my nightmares. So it just was a no-brainer that I'd go up there and I said, listen, I'll scream at people in a New York accent, not a stretch for me. And it's I was confident it would work, but I'll admit I'll be a little proud of myself that I've done as well as I've done. I'm surprised. Even I'm surprised. I thought I'd fuck up a lot more at this point, and I haven't.
Is there something different about seeing a play, particularly a play that you've nurtured for such a long time, to see it from the stage perspective? I mean, it's one thing to be sitting in the front rows as the director. It's another thing to be watching it anxiously off wing, in the wings as a producer.
Yeah, it's very, very different. I mean, fortunately for me, in this piece, I'm only in the final piece, so I do get to see everything else as I would normally. This particular piece is quite a thrill for me, though, because if I have all the theater material I've written, it is in my top three of favorite pieces I've written. This would be one. The play you saw last year, Inventor and the Escort, is another. And my play All Aboard the Marriage Hearse are easily my three favorite pieces I've written. So to be able to actually perform in one of them and be on the stage and feel the energy coming from the audience, because they are laughing at this piece. It's very farcical and slapsticky, which I know is very popular sometimes in the UK, and the audiences here seem to like it. To get that is exciting. I've always been a Blues Brothers fan, and Jake, you know, Dan Aykroyd has that quote, and, you know, no pharmaceutical product in the world can equal the rush of playing in front of a live band. Very similarly, that rush you get from people laughing at you when you're on stage is, I can't explain it. I mean, it has to be felt. So.
One of my favorite questions that I'm asking this year is it easier to put things in than to take them out? And I think that particularly in terms of a raunchy script, is it easier to put in a joke, and is it harder to take a joke out when you think, you know what, maybe this is too far the other side, you know, how do we keep the sensibility? Because the thing that permeated, you mentioned the escort thing that permeates Angry Young Women, is there is such a strong voice, it's your voice, you know, but it's a voice that without being limited knows its boundaries.
Yeah. You know, it's a hard question to answer. I think that for me, well, the way I say this, I have never in my career set out to offend anybody, but I always say it this way, I don't really care if I do.
Dude, I follow you on Facebook. Yeah. I'm not entirely sure that's true.
But it's not the intent. The intent is something different. I'm not saying it isn't the result sometimes, but it's never the intent. And but I also don't concern myself. I think it was Louis C.K. has a great quote, like, oh, you're offended, great. I've forced you to think about something now. Good. And I kind of look at it that way. My only concern with any kind of jokes is I don't ever want to pick on the little guy, if you will, the underdog, or perceived that way. In fact, it's funny. I'm a huge, huge gay rights supporter. It's one of my pet issues in the States. There used to be some jokes in this last bit that were at the expense of the director character who's ambiguously gay, and I took them out. And I took them out not through any pressure, not because I thought they were offensive to anyone. And I work in New York theater. I have many friends in the gay community. No one ever had an issue with it, but I did. And I said, you know what? It's 2014. There's nothing wrong with being gay. Let's not make those kind of jokes anymore. And I didn't want to make those kind of jokes. I don't think they were offensive. I don't think anyone had been offended. In fact, all my friends who are gay who saw the show always thought it was funny. But to me, I think it's important to evolve. And if this piece is going to change with the times, we need to change it with the times. Because hip New Yorkers, who are these characters supposed to be, would not make those kind of jokes today.
Getting on to the subject of gratuity, I mean, there is nudity in the scene. Is that really needed?
Well, I never answer.
I'm not saying I don't like it or I don't want it. I'm just saying, is it needed?
Here's how I always answer the question. I think you can make the argument that it's never needed, but, and I don't mean to get philosophical, but then it comes down to what does that even mean? What is necessary? I mean, when is swearing necessary? So the way I always answer it, instead of saying whether it's necessary, I answer one of two questions. Is it A? Most importantly, is it make the piece better? B, is it distracting? Does it distract you from the rest of the piece? And if the answers to that are yes and no, it's fine. Then the rest is just details and it's up to the actor. We actually, in this production, we don't always do the nudity. We, based on each production, we decide based on what we're doing and what we're going for and what sensibility, whether we go there out. Sometimes we tone it down. But it really all depends on what we're going for. And I think part of the issue that I do like to do, and I'm sure you're aware of this, in the States, we're so bashful about this. Like, we show a nipple on TV, we got to have congressional hearings, but they'll show people's heads blowing up, and nobody cares. Nobody bats an eye. And I think that if there's one thing I'd like to see happen in my country is people to relax about sexuality and sex, because I think it all stems from I think it stems from misogyny. I think there's this shame around female body that is perpetuated in the society and then really pushed onto women. So whether it's necessary, I think it is. I think for what we're trying to get across here, I think it was. Not always, but in this case, I think it was.
And the script is going where from here?
You know, that remains to be seen. The irony of this piece, or the funny thing about it, is we first premiered it in January 19th, 2006 in New York, on a lark, trying to raise money for a film. We didn't do that, but instead we became a cult hit in New York, and we had four or five subsequent runs in New York over the next 5 years. It went to L.A., Sydney, and in December of 2011, we announced the final run of this play, of this piece, ever by the original company. I mean, it's published by Samuel French. Anyone can license it and put it up wherever they want, but we would never do it again, and we meant it. We threw a big party, 175 performances, thanks for the support, blah, 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 hence passing the torch to colleges who do it all the time in the States. And then when we had the success last year, Jessica, my co-producer and the lead actress in the show, said, what show can we bring here next year? And we said, Angry Young Women will get over here. They'd like that here. And, you know, like the classic Pacino line, every time we think we're out, they pull us back in. So,
And the I mean, obviously the question does become 2015. What are you going to do for the 2015?
We've had very preliminary discussions about coming back next year. We don't know. I mean, if this show continues to draw audience as it does and continues to be as well received as it is, there we may want to come back with this, retool it a little bit. The beauty of this project, it's fun. We get to bring it. There will always be issues between the men and women. There will always be changing morals between generations and changing attitudes towards sex. So the beauty of it is we can keep theoretically bringing it back and updating it for its time period. So that's on the table. Because if people really like the show here, we certainly love doing it. And I got to tell you, I mean, after coming here last year, all I've looked forward to since I got on the plane back to the States was coming back this year. And I know I speak for Rich and Jess as well, because we could not wait to come back. And right now we're like, can we come next year too? Like, we got to, but come see the show, because the more tickets we sell, the more chances we're back next year.
Can you see yourself as a producer of multiple plays at the Fringe? I mean, you're kind of like a mother hen when it comes to your shows. Could you imagine having a bit more of a brood?
No, I tend to doubt that. That's really not my skill set. I'm a writer and a producer, but I'm very specific in that I'm really good at what I do. I'm not great at what other people do. Like, for example, I never want to direct anybody else's scripts. I don't think I'm that good. I think I'm good, like Billy Joel. Yeah, you're familiar with Billy Joel. I always tell people I'm like a Billy Joel. Billy Joel is a great singer for his songs, but if you were starting a band, you wouldn't want him as your singer. I'm good at singing my songs. I'm not particularly good at other people's. And as far as judging other pieces, it's very difficult for me to do that. So that would be hard. I mean, it wouldn't be out of the question for my company to do it, because I got Rich as a partner now, who's much better at that kind of stuff than me. So that's certainly something that could be along down the road, but I would more likely than not be focused on whatever show I'm directing or I'm responsible for.
For such a political person and, a politically motivated person, there is quite an absence of big P politics in your, party politics in your stuff. I mean, is that something you'd ever explore, or is it more of a deliberate, this isn't my voice?
Yeah, that's part of it. I'm not a fan of didactic stuff, even if I agree with the point of view. Like, I can watch a movie. Like, again, I just mentioned before, gay rights are a big issue for me. I'm a big supporter. But I could, if I watch a movie about gay rights that I think is didactic and preachy and just not good, I won't like it. I'm not going to like it just because I agree with the point of view. And I think it's important to present all points of view. And I think that, I'm working on a screenplay now based on my play. My only drama I ever wrote, American Soldiers, which was about a soldier coming home from Iraq with PTSD. And there's certainly political stuff in there, but it is, again, a little more down the road, where it indicts your average American, along with Republicans and Democrats, for their lazy attitude towards their country and being engaged and allowing things to go on that should not be going on in allegedly the world's leading democracy. And in the new piece I'm writing, in the screenplay adaptation, there's certainly a political element to it, but growing up in a very, although I'm a leftist, I'm very much a liberal, I grew up in a very Republican right-wing area, so I understand all sides of the issue, and it makes it easy for me to not portray either side as a cartoon, a two-dimensional character. But it's not something necessary that now that interests me, but I'm not against it if something comes up that something political interests me, yeah.
I'm one of the few people who can talk authoritatively without preaching. It's a fantastic skill. Now, as you remember from last year, we do like to finish these interviews by asking what is the show that your audience should go and see after they have seen Angry Young Women in low-rise jeans with high-class issues?
Well, because we're only a week in and I haven't had my first day off from promotions, I haven't seen any of the shows yet this year. However, I will say this. There's a fella named Rory, his last name escapes me at the moment, has a show called Boxman, which I have not seen yet, but his show last year was phenomenal. I'm looking forward to seeing his. And there's a show that precedes ours called Circumcise Me, which I have, again, not. I'm going to see that Wednesday on my first day off. I cannot wait to see. And I've met Yisrael, the performer and the writer. He's a funny, funny guy. And I hear audiences laughing while I'm out waiting to go into my show. So I'm looking forward to those. Those are the two at the top of my head. I haven't seen them, but I can recommend them.
Manrilo, thank you for talking to Fringe Review.
My pleasure. Thank you.